Evan Roberts. Tiki Barber. It's Evan and Tiki on WFAN, The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
It is a super wild card Friday, but before we talk any football, and there will be a lot of football throughout this show, we'll make our picks for wild card weekend. Sean Morash will unveil a very special Cinco de Stinko, ranking the worst seasons in New York Giant history. But before we get to any of that, we need to begin this show with an applause. We need to begin this show with a thank you. Because sometimes we forget about not just the power of WFAN, but the power of the voice. And yesterday, 24 hours ago, right here on this radio station, the legendary Tiki Barber very kindly, very nicely, sent a message to Pete Alonso and Scott Boras. And if you missed any of it, of course, you could go to our Evan and Tiki podcast, but I'll summarize. Basically, Tiki said, hey, Pete, be careful. You know, you don't necessarily want to leave New York. And we talked about Tiki's experience and talked about other athletes' experiences. And within 16 hours of that beautiful lecture that Tiki put together, what happens? We find out that Scott Boras is shopping exclusively to the New York Mets, a short-term deal, because they clearly want to get a job and get this job done with the New York Mets. And you are delusional if you don't think that's because of the voice of Tiki Barber.
I'll take my platitudes. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'll be here every day. Monday to Friday, 2 to 6:30 p.m. Give us a call at 888-808-1019. This is Tiki Barber.
And I mean this. That phone line is open all day, and you can use it to talk Giant football and wild card weekend. But, Loogie, please make sure that line is also open for any Met fan that wants to use it, whether it's right here at the top of the show, whether it's later in the show, to simply say thank you to Tiki Barber at 888-808-1019, because you've taught me a few things over the last year and a half.
Right. You're going to make me a Met fan, Evan.
I'm working.
First, I get you Steve Cohen. Bring back Pete Alonso.
Well, you taught me don't believe in coincidences. So The idea that out of nowhere yesterday, you were talking about the importance of spending your career in New York, and then less than 24 hours later, there's this exclusive offer with the Mets. I don't believe in coincidences.
Well, I think it's maybe exactly what you said. At some point, Pete Alonso's got to express to Scott Boras, I'm the actual boss here. The actual one in control, and this is where I would like to be. Let's get a deal done as soon as possible. That's what it feels like.
No doubt.
Doesn't feel like a Boras maneuver. You know what I mean? That just having watched some of the negotiations that Scott Boras and his clients have had over the previous, you know, years or decade, it's not this. You know, it's not, hey, let's just narrow this down to one team, give you a friendly engagement, so it's not 6 or 7 years, but a 3-year deal, which we know you're more likely to do with one team. That doesn't feel like Scott Boras. That feels like what Pete Alonso would actually want to happen.
That feels like it got to Pete, what you said. He listened to it. He took the advice, and he called up Scott and said, go get a deal done. So I think you've done your part as the New York sports legend. So I'm going to try in a very small, brief way to do my part. And that is, I'm going to talk to the New York Mets now. You did a great job talking to Pete. I'm going to talk to the New York Mets. I'm going to make this perfectly clear. You can't lose Pete Alonso now. If he's really willing to take a short-term deal, then there are no excuses. The excuses are gone. If you wanted to convince me, look, Evan, it'd be stupid to give him a 5-year deal. If some schmucky team wants to do it, you got to just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, we're not going to make that business decision. But on a short-term, opt-out, laden 3-year deal, there is zero excuse for Pete Alonso to not be a New York Met. So now, it's on you, David Stearns. It's on you, Steve Cohen, to seal the freaking deal. Go get this deal done now. Tiki's done his part, okay? He got Scott and Pete to get it out of their mind that they need a 5 or 6 year contract. That's clearly gone away. They are now open to a short term, opt-out laden deal. So, David Stearns, you have the football on the two-yard line. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to fumble it, or are you going to run over the dopey linebacker and score a touchdown?
Go score. Make it
go
easy.
Go score a touchdown.
Make Mets fans happy.
Make Met fans happy. Now, speaking of linebackers, last night I was trapped in a room watching nothing but sports. So first of all, I want to congratulate the New York Islanders on a nice shutout victory against the Las Vegas, whatever the hell you call them. And I want to even congratulate the Rangers for teasing their fans into actually thinking they're not dead yet by beating the Devils last night.
Yes, who were in a massive slump.
But let's
points in four of the last five, Evan.
Oh, stop it. But let's cut to the real chase of last night. Giant fans, aren't you lucky you didn't get caught drafting that stiff Drew Aller? Because all I saw last night, you want me to be honest? You want me to be an IFO?
Tell us.
I saw Christian Hackenberg last night. Well, that's what I saw.
Yeah, that was a rough performance by Aller. I mean, he didn't complete a pass. I didn't realize it until I read it this morning. He didn't complete a pass to a wide receiver.
No, he
last
didn't.
Night, it's just like, how is that even possible in college football? So, yeah, he had a bad day. But this is exactly what Sean and I talked about when we talked about Drew Aller yesterday. He needs another year of development. Now, that development could happen in college or it could happen in the NFL backing up some team. But I watching last night, I think he needs another year in college.
So no doubt.
His initial thought process, which was to not declare for the NFL draft, is probably the right one. Go with your gut here, Drew, because you didn't look good last night against a really good Notre Dame team.
Last night, things became a little bit clearer, but also a little bit more confusing for the New York Giants. So in one breath, Drew Aller's not going to be an idiot. He's not going to come out of school, and we'll reevaluate this next year. Yeah. My gut feeling, though, and I admit I'm biased towards the fact that Penn State quarterbacks, outside of Kerry Collins, no offense, Tiki, mostly suck at the NFL level. But Drew Aller, go spend another year, develop a little bit more, and this will be a discussion for next year if the Jets or Giants, both, maybe neither, are looking for a quarterback. The other thing is, Deshaun Watson's going to be out for next year, so the odds are even higher of the Cleveland Browns taking a quarterback, which means right. that either one of two things are going to happen.
Wait. That's what you think?
Go ahead.
You don't think the Cleveland Browns are taking a quarterback?
If I misspoke, I apologize. Because Deshaun Watson's out for the year, they're clearly taking a quarterback.
They were probably taking one anyways, but now they're almost definitely taking one.
I want to warn you, I am so drugged up right now on a lot of different medicines. So if I misspeak, absolutely correct me me across the face.
You didn't misspeak, but...
Then what's your problem?
Who did Kevin Stefanski have the most success with before coming to Cleveland that got him a job in Cleveland?
Baker?
Kirk Cousins.
Oh, Kirk Cousins.
They're not signing Kirk Cousins.
And Kevin Stefanski is entering next year in the hot seat with the same giant urgency to win? Don't tell me that Kirk Cousins ain't the Browns quarterback next year.
He's not. Well, he may be as a bridge to let whoever they draft sit. Now, look. The Cleveland Browns and the Tennessee Titans are very likely to take quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. The caveat to all of this is what I've predicted for a while now. What I've predicted for 5 days now, which is that Shedeur Sanders is going to refuse to go to either place and force his way to the New York Giants. If that doesn't happen and the quarterbacks are gone 1-2, which I think is what the teams are going to want to do, your Kirk Cousins idea, to me, like, it's a bridge thing. It's not we're going to pass on a young quarterback and sign Kirk Cousins because he's our answer for the next 3 years, or he's going to bridge us to a healthy Deshaun Watson. I think that's delusional. But I think the other thing that happened last night is you watched the dual Carter, and you probably as a Giant fan said, well, hold on a second. Maybe it's not just immediately Travis Hunter.
Right.
Maybe I got to think about this demon who had 12 sacks last year or this year and could be my next great defensive player in a franchise that is littered with big-time pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the 49ers when they started building. You think about the Rams when they were furiously through free agency trying to win a championship. It started with edge rushers, right?
Yes.
They were bringing in edge rusher after edge rusher after edge rusher. And I know the Giants have two now with Brian Burns coming in free agency last year, or actually a trade last year, and then Kayvon Thibodeau, but you can't have enough of them. Go back to the 2007 Giants, or the Super Bowl Giants. They had like four of them on that team. And being able to rotate and have quality and effective pass rushing all the time, not just, two or three you know, downs in a row is actually very beneficial. So Abdul Carter may be the guy. In fact, if you look at some of the draft boards, Abdul Carter is number one on the list, not Travis Henry. I mean, it's they've switched
Hunter,
back.
Yeah.
I mean, Travis Hunter. They switch back and forth on those boards depending on which one you look at. But to me, it's still Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter can help you on both sides of the football.
Is that the reason though?
Is that the reason? I mean, it's
okay.
I think the unknown is appealing to me when I think about Travis Hunter, and I know he can be a great corner. I didn't even realize, because I didn't watch a lot of Colorado football, how amazing of a wide receiver he was. You know, 1,400 yards he had this past season. And so you know he's going to at least have some impact, even if it's not a full, you know, 60 plays on offense every game. He's going to have some packages that are going to be super beneficial to whoever, whatever team he's on. So to me, Travis Hunter gives you that, I don't know, that it's an unknown that you know is only positive. That makes sense.
What I was daydreaming about last night, just to show you I'm an IFO, because I'm not a Giant fan, but as I was watching this game, and it was a very entertaining game, and by the way, congratulations to all the Irish fans out there, now going to play for the national championship. We'll see what happens tonight with the Buckeyes against Texas. But as I'm watching this game, I admit, my brain is more focused on the impact it'll have on the Giants and Jets.
Right.
And all I could think about in watching Abdul Carter was, the Giants need an identity. Like, and I thought coming into this season, the reason I was wrong about them, I thought they'd win 7 or 8 games, is because I thought their identity was going to be a pass rush. And it didn't really happen this season.
Yeah.
And I think
it got better at the end, but you're right.
It did. It did. And I think to myself, look, as good as Travis Hunter can be in theory, especially helping you in two ways, boy, if you bring Abdul in to go along with what you already have with Brian Burns and what you hope continues to develop, even though it kind of didn't as much this year due to injury in Kayvon Thibodeau, and how good Dexter Lawrence is, like, my brain tells me that's the identity of the next really good Giant team. And that's why, as I'm watching last night, I'm realizing Drew Aller's a stiff. I'm watching Christian Hackenberg. Was I kind of lean towards Abdul Carter because I can see the future that this would be your identity moving forward if you're the New York Giants.
Oh, and especially, just think of the parallel to the Kyle Shanahan situation out in San Francisco. He's the offensive-minded coach, right? He's taken, you know, care of that side of the ball. And so what you do is you draft the studs on the other side of the ball. And so as long as you have a capable scheme, you're kind of covering all your bases, because you know you can create success offensively as long as you have good quarterback play. But then you bring in guys who are going to be a menace to opposing quarterbacks. It makes it a win-win situation if everything goes the way you planned it to go.
Now, last night, Sean was all about Drew Aller. You've been talking about him for weeks and weeks. Like, that's been your boy. As you watched last night's game, did you come to the, all right, screw this, I'm getting off the Drew Aller bandwagon? Like, what was your thought watching this last night?
My thought was, man, there's a world we live in where both Abdul Carter and Drew Aller are New York Giants after the next 2 years. Because Drew should absolutely come back. And I'll check back in on you, buddy, to see how you did. Evan, overall, look, it would have been better for the Giants in their thirst for a quarterback to have another quarterback catapult himself to the top of the draft. It didn't happen. It was always caveated on whether Drew Aller could rise to the occasion. He didn't last night. But, man, I actually saw Mina Kimes tweet this, and, you know, I hate to, whatever. Like, I thought it was actually a good tweet. Abdul Carter passes the alien test. An alien can come from Earth. Tiki, don't get any ideas. Look at the field and go, that is undoubtedly the best player on the field.
Right.
And when you think about Giant football and what we all grin our teeth, that is always about pass rush, pass rush, pass rush. What the Giants cannot do anymore in drafts is simply plug holes for needs. Yes, they have two what I consider very good pass rushers. I'm adding to it, because the best days of Giants football, the late 80s and then those mid-2000 runs, were all predicated on it, and I am not letting Abdul Carter at 3 get out of my sights when he's that freakish a player. Now, will I be disappointed if they take Travis Hunter, Tiki? No. But if I am kind of breaking a tie here, I got to be honest, on a football field, when Travis Hunter has logged as many snaps as he had both ways, there is a little bit of that hesitation going, is this a guy that's going to wear down in his career a lot earlier than I think, where I know I'm getting an undoubt, like, Myles Garrett-type pass rusher? I'm leaning Abdul Carter now.
Interesting. That's interesting.
So, in this world,
because that comes out of nowhere. I don't think anybody was talking about the Giants taking an edge rusher.
No, a week ago. And look, and he was always talked about in the top five, top ten. But the more you think about it and you watch him on that stage, come on, how do you not drool?
Well, I mean, look, you're right. There is something about being a gamer. There is something about having whatever the opportunity is, and you know everybody's watching. It is a massive stage, and there are huge stakes on the line, and you play that way. You can't find that. You can't replicate that anywhere. You're not going to get that in practice. You're not going to get that in a preseason game. You only see it when the opportunity presents itself. And he acquitted himself very well last night.
I think it comes down to an age-old, a really decade-long football question. And it's a very simple one. When you look at the different positions in the NFL, what do you value the most? And I think we'd all agree quarterback is number one. So we kind of put that to the side.
Well, I mean, it's simple. It's like quarterback, protecting quarterback, getting after quarterback.
Okay, well, but so that's where I stop. So we got quarterback number one, left tackle number two. Completely agree with you.
Right.
Would you rather have, and this is where I'm more mixed, an edge pass rusher that can get to the quarterback or a lockdown corner like Darrelle Revis was in his prime, where you can take away the number one weapon of your opponent?
So it's hard to do the lockdown corner thing because teams aren't playing as much man as they used to, where it was like, all right, just man up across the board. You get the best guy, and everybody else will figure it out. If you try to do that, I think Robert Saleh mentioned this a little bit 2 years ago. We asked him about why you don't do that with Sauce. Why don't you lock Sauce into the best wide receiver? And he said, because if we do that with Sauce, then we have to do it with others as well. And it just makes it really complicated, especially if you don't have, you know, high quality players all over the secondary. And so they just leave him on one side and let him basically try to lock down a side as opposed to lock down a player. You know, look, which one would I rather have? I think, honestly, I want the edge rusher. I think the edge rusher, it can affect the play more consistently than a lockdown corner who you can just go away from. You know what I mean? So, to me, it's the edge rusher.
And that answers your question, man, because I do agree with Sean about this, where the Giants are. You can't be thinking about need. You got to be thinking about who is the best player on the field.
Yeah, but you just traded two draft picks and paid Brian Burns a lot of money. You had an awful season, and you're going to, at number three, take another pass rusher?
Yeah, but
why did they bring in Brian Burns?
Well, I think this is what Evan's saying. It's a philosophy. It's not necessarily the individuals that you're talking about. It's what's our identity going to be? So if you look at the Giants right now and ask them, what is their identity? Like, what's the Giants' identity?
They don't have one.
Sucking.
Right.
Well,
honestly, if there was something that you could point at and say, this is what the Giants are really good at, what would it be?
I would say,
than throwing the ball to Malik Nabers.
Correct. Passing attack with Malik if they could get a guy to get him the football.
But that wasn't really consistent. You saw that in like four games. And so they need an identity. And so what are you going to put it on? Is it going to be running the football? If you ask the Philadelphia Eagles, what's their identity? They're going to say, we're going to maul you at the line of scrimmage, and Saquon's going to run the ball. Our quarterback's going to run the ball. If we get third or fourth and short, you cannot stop us. So their identity is controlling the offensive trenches. The Giants don't have one.
But if they drafted Abdul Carter, they would have one very quickly. And
well,
I wouldn't look at
would. You hope
well,
they
in,
would.
Right. In theory, they in would. Theory. Because Kayvon Thibodeau needs to be healthy and needs to continue to develop. Sure.
I think Kayvon Thibodeau also needs to be healthy and develop.
Yeah, both of them do. You
know. What did I just say? Isn't that what I just said?
You said Thibodeau again.
You got Knicks on the brain.
You know whose fault that is? That's Tom Thibodeau's fault.
That is Tom Thibodeau's fault.
And it's basketball season. Look, I think that last night was a lot of fun. Because last night wasn't just fun for those who bet. It wasn't just those fun for those who are Irish. It was fun for the Giant fans' minds to circle on all the possibilities. And I warn you today, on this 4.5-hour get-together that we have, there will be many things discussed. Whether it's Tiki Barber saving the New York Mets and causing Pete Alonso and Scott Boras to come back to the Mets and say, we'll take a short-term deal. Whether it's dreaming about what the Giants should do at three. Whether it's an in-depth look at Aaron Glenn. Whether it's previewing Wild Card Weekend. I warn you, buckle up. You're in for a 4.5-hour ride today. And we'll talk to you throughout the day at 888-808-1019. We got a jam-packed show today. One thing I'm looking forward to is yesterday I challenged Sean to come up with his own Cinco de Stinko, because I ranked the five worst seasons in the history of the New York Jets yesterday at 3:30. And so coming up today at 3:30, Sean will present us his Cinco de Stinko on the five worst years in the history of the New York Giants. I assume that you compile that list, Sean, and you are good to go at 3:30?
Oh, I am good to go. And I had Giants legend Tiki Barber observing me put together a list, adding anecdotes to my conversation.
Oh, look at that. That's impressive. I did not have any former Jets adding anecdotes to my Cinco
list.
Well,
there's only a couple of really, really bad years that I participated in, and I had to make sure it was on the list.
No, I understand. Coming up in the next 10 minutes, I promise you, I mentioned before the break, we'll explore if Joe Shane is really a bad human being. We'll go through that coming up in 10 minutes, but let's get to your calls. A lot on the table today. Obviously, last night we had a college football semifinal game. Notre Dame beat Penn State. It was a great game, but it also caused Giant and Jet fans to evaluate draft prospects. And obviously, Tiki Barber is a hero to all of us because we don't believe in coincidences. Yesterday, to open this program, Tiki gave a compelling case to Pete Alonso on the importance of remaining in New York. And less than 24 hours later, a report comes from a very reliable man named Jim Duquette saying Scott Boras and Pete Alonso have come back to the Mets saying, hey, you know what? We are open to a short-term contract that involves opt-outs. We don't believe in coincidences. We believe the voice of Tiki Barber and the voice of WFAN made that kind of impact.
Hey, it's Tiki Barber.
Let's kick things off on this beautiful Friday in New York City with Josh, who's calling from Smithtown. Good afternoon, Josh.
Hey, just really quickly, before I get to my Pete point, I don't really understand the Jets hiring everyone with a, interviewing everyone with a pulse. Like, if they hired Matt Nagy, that would be the end of Beningo for good. We would put him in the ground, I think. I mean,
no, you're right about that.
I just don't really understand the
process. They are definitely going with the whole, we have a wide net. But I think the one that really took the cake was the report earlier today that they're interviewing the head coach of Maryland. And when you look up Mike Locksley and you're like, okay, well, what's the deal with the head coach of Maryland? And you see his win-loss record, you're like, what?
I know.
So you're right. They have a very wide-open net. A lot of it doesn't make much sense.
And then as far as Pete goes, I mean, obviously, there, you know, the interest in him, it's clearly not there. I mean, it's pretty obvious. But to come out with this offer for the Mets, is that basically an admission that no other team would be willing to do a short-term deal? I mean, it seems like they're handcuffing themselves a little bit. And Boras isn't someone who usually rushes things. He'd be willing to wait. So I just think this is a very bizarre move all around. I guess it's just how much power Tiki has.
That or this is coming from Pete Alonso. I mean, we said this yesterday, and Evan did, that ultimately Boras can say all he wants. But Pete's the boss, right? Pete gets to say ultimately where I want to be, who I'm going to sign with, and how I want the negotiations to go. And I think most of the clients of Boras just leave it to Scott Boras because he's so good at making the most money. But right now, it feels very dry. And maybe, like, I'm not going to, Evan's joking. I don't think that they actually listened to my rant yesterday about why it's important to be a New York Met for Pete Alonso. But maybe Pete feels that way. And at some point, He's got to start negotiating with somebody. He's not negotiating with anybody.
Stop being humble, because you're the one who always says you don't believe in coincidences.
So now all
of a sudden you think yesterday was a coincidence?
No, I don't. But I don't know. It's just, I'm not cocky enough to say it was my doing.
No,
I'm not like some others that have been on or previously on this radio station and to believe that my words move mountains.
I tell you why I think it. Believe it or not, I'm not fully kidding about this. I do believe it. It's not that you're the end-all be-all, but you are a great example, I think, of somebody who understands the benefit of being in New York their entire career.
Right.
Like, you talk from an experience that I obviously don't have, that, you know, all of us don't have. As even Boomer, as a great guy, he doesn't have that experience. He was in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Like, you are a guy not from New York who played here, who had success here. And I think you probably thought halfway through your career when you were a free agent, okay, I could leave. I could make more money. And what does that do for me?
Right.
Like, where does that leave me? So I do think that your voice matters. You know, me screaming into a microphone and lecturing Pete Alonso does nothing. You, I do think it matters. Now, to answer the question about the exclusivity thing and, you know, why Boras is doing this, I think there's two reasons in my mind. Number one, I do think Pete Alonso wants to come back.
You know, I do think he'd prefer to be a New York Met.
Right, and he said that.
Yeah, I think he's made that very, very clear. Right. I also think, let's think about this from a business perspective. If Scott Boras has now realized, okay, short term's the best option, is what it is. We're not getting a 5 or 6 year deal. So let's sign one of those Cody Bellinger-like contracts, 3 year deal with an opt out after year 1, 2, or 3. Where do you think Pete Alonso would go and have the best chance to succeed?
It would be a place he knows. Right.
Bingo. I would argue it's staying in a place he knows in a lineup that is going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
So leaving and taking this contract that they're shaping to the Mets to go to San Francisco is not putting Pete in the best chance to maximize his value. It's actually better for him to stay. So it's not just the emotional attachment of he wants to be a Met. I think from a business perspective, his best chance to have success this year and then turn it into a longer contract down the road is being a member of the New York Mets.
Yeah, I mean, that makes the most sense for Pete. And by the way, I think it's symbiotic in some regards because the Mets also need him.
Yes.
Right? As much as we are applauding them for stealing Juan Soto from the Yankees or signing him as a free agent, you know what I mean? It's just their lineup's not full. It's not set. You need someone at first base, right? There's some holes that are still wide open, and I think Pete Alonso fills one. And obviously, it was his job already, but you know what I mean? He's technically not a member of the New York Mets right now. And so by bringing him back, you fill one of the many holes that are still left after the Juan Soto signing.
Jackson is calling from Plainview. How are you doing today, Jackson?
Hi, Evan. Hi, Tiki.
What's up, man?
What's up?
Before I get to my Giants point, I just would like to give Evan a piece of advice.
Uh-oh.
last year I called in around conference championship weekend, and Evan's father-in-law, Abuelo, watched the wrong game during conference championship weekend. So I was just like, when you're feeling better, please invite your father-in-law to watch the game so that he's not watching the Super Bowl from 2020.
Jackson, the fact that you remember this and the fact that you gave me this warning.
That's awesome.
I'm a super fan of this show. That's why I remember. I listen to this show.
I appreciate that. You know what? I'm going to write that down because I completely forgot about that until you reminded me that, yes, I did walk in on my father-in-law watching the wrong game, thinking it was the right game. And you know what? I'm going to fix that once I am healthy. Thank you, Jackson.
Yeah. So to my Giants point, I watched the Mara presser like 3 times, and I had this guy saying he doesn't know if the roster is better than it was 3 years ago, but he believes in the process. Mm. So why, I guess, Tiki, try to like from a fan point, like, why should I have any sort of confidence that his owner's has the right idea? He's like, he just didn't want to hit the reboot button, right?
Right. Well, it just gets to, it becomes ultimately diminishing returns if you just keep trying the same thing over again. That is, hire a coach, fire him 2 years later. Hire a coach, fire him 2 years later. Hire a coach, fire him 2 years later. Hire a coach, fire him 3 years later. Like, at some point, you have to create some level of stability. But I think your confusion or take on, I don't know if the roster is better now than it was 2 years ago, is an astute one. Because I think what John Mara was trying to do was express confidence in Joe Shane, but acknowledge and let us make the determination on whether or not the roster is better than it was 2 years ago. Because let's face it, those first two drafts weren't great, right? The last one was fantastic. And so you got to give him his platitudes for doing that. But you also have to acknowledge this team is not better than it was 2 years ago. And so it's like, it's his way of talking out of both sides of his mouth, right? And he had to do it because he had just said, look, Joe Shane's coming back. I'm not going to tell you, Joe Shane's a failure, but he's coming back. You got to say, Joe Shane hasn't been great, but last year's draft was fantastic, so he's coming back. You know what I mean? So it's, you got to put it in, and you got to throw some sugar and some salt at the same time.
Yeah, so I'll give you an analogy, and I think I can do this now. He passed away 10 days ago, so I can make this analogy. When Jimmy Carter is running for re-election in 1980, if a reporter asks him, are Americans better off than they were 4 years ago? He can't say yes.
Mm-hmm.
If he says yes, he's lying.
Right.
Now, what made Jimmy Carter such an honorable guy, and I think John Mara is an honorable guy, is they don't want to lie. So when John Mara is asked point blank, hey, do you think the roster is better off than it was 3 years ago? John could lie to you. He could be a politician and say, yeah, we're better off. He didn't do it. He was very, I remember that question and the way he paused and thought about it. Mm-hmm. He said, well, I can't say we're better off. Well, once you say that, you lose any ability to get reelected.
Right.
As you know, Jimmy Carter was not reelected in 1980. He lost in a true landslide to Ronald Reagan. And then 4 years later, when Reagan's asked, hey, are we better off than we were 4 years ago? He was able to say, yes.
Yes.
And then guess what happened? He got reelected. So when John Mara says we're not better off than we were 3 years ago, it makes it very difficult to then tell Giant fans, but we're bringing back the same group.
Right.
Because then the follow-up is, well, then why?
Mm-hmm.
If you're admitting we're not better off than we were 3 years ago, President's case 4 years ago, how can you sell me that you deserve more time? And I think that's a fair question that Jackson brings up, and it's a fair question any Giant fan has. How can you sell me they should come back when you're admitting that we're not better off than we were 3 years ago from a talent perspective?
Yeah, they're not, right? Currently, they don't have a quarterback. And their offensive line, well, I know it is a little bit better. Is it that significantly better? No, so much of this depends on Andrew Thomas at left tackle, but is the secondary better? I don't think so. It's definitely not, because you lost two guys who were Pro Bowl-level players.
So the other question I bring up, and I mentioned this earlier, I posed, is Joe Shane a bad guy? I'd like to read you an excerpt from an article that was written by Jordan Ronan of ESPN. A lot about the Giants, but there was one excerpt that's gotten a lot of attention. It certainly jumped out at me. I had certainly a strong reaction to reading it. I'm very curious, Tiki, your thoughts. And for those that haven't heard it, I'm going to read it to you from Jordan Ronan at ESPN. Before the start of week four this season against the Cowboys, the Giants wanted McLeod, Nick McLeod, of course, to take a pay cut from the one-year $2.98 million deal he signed as a restricted free agent in the offseason, according to a player source. McLeod wanted to remain with the Giants, but on his current deal. Asking him to take a pay cut during the season before a game he was set to start was bold and unusual, according to multiple executives around the league. According to multiple Giant players, Shane told McLeod's reps, don't pay October's rent, all right? As soon as I can replace him, I'm going to replace him. I'm not bleeping around. The GM then hung up the phone. Your thoughts on that, Teak? Is that usual behavior?
Well, I don't know, but I know you see stuff like this happen often in the NFL. That is, guy's on a team, and a day later, he is no longer on a team. He gets cut for whatever reason. Now, why was he starting? Because the Giants don't have starting-level cornerbacks, period. Nick McLeod was a waiver pickup by the New York Giants. It's not like he was drafted in the first or second or third round 2 years ago. So I get that it makes a convenient story to make Joe Shane look like an ass, but when did we become a participation trophy league? Right? When did we get? I know we got softer on the field, but now we're evaluating it from a media standpoint with a soft touch. You deserve to start. You don't deserve to start. You're lucky to be here. I'm talking about any player. I'm not talking about Nick, but any player. Right? Coaches or general managers can make moves, and it's a cutthroat business. It's why you've heard me say this often, and sometimes people get pissed off when I say it, like, oh, it's not. They got contracts. They got all these other things. You in the NFL, unless your contract is as heavily signing bonus laden, so it's punitive to your salary cap, are an at-will employee, meaning you can be fired at any time, period, for whatever reason. And some of them are good reasons, some of them are not good reasons. Nick McLeod was a victim of that. And by the way, did we miss Nick McLeod? I mean, seriously, did we miss him?
No.
Exactly. I get it. I understand he's probably a source for somebody, and this is coming directly from his mouth, but this is the NFL. Tough decisions like this get made every single day. And to position it as anything other than that's the art of doing business in the NFL, it's false. It's lying to the public, because this happens everywhere. I see it every single week. We go into some of these games, some of these cities to call these games. I'm like, oh, this guy he was starting 2 weeks ago. He's not on the team anymore, right? It happens often. And so I get it. It's frustrating for me to read that we're soft like this, that we get offended because a guy gets cut. That's the NFL.
My only concern is not about Nate McLeod, to be honest with you.
Nick McLeod.
I'm sorry. Who's Nate McLeod? Oh, I'm thinking of...
The outfielder you're thinking of. The Pittsburgh Pirates outfielder.
And the fact that you just called him Nate says it all.
Right.
Yeah. Nate McLeod was the guy's name. No, my concern is not about Nick McLeod, because you're right. Like, this is a cutthroat business. Here's my concern. My only concern, if this is real or not, you can tell me, is if this pisses off other players and other player agents. Because I think sports is a relationship business, and I wouldn't want other agents and players to say, yeah, I don't want to play for that organization. I don't want to play for that general manager. That's the only thing about a story like this that would give me any concern.
Did that happen in 2003 when the Patriots did this to lawyer freaking Malloy? And he refused to take the
Patriots,
pay cut?
The Patriots are different. I wouldn't use them as an example.
Well, this is where they're different, and this is where the situation's different. This is where Joe Shane has gone wrong. The fact that he's put together such a crummy roster has elevated a guy like Nick McLeod, who shouldn't have been starting on this team to begin with, to have the hierarchy in the locker room. The locker room does care that much. So... It is crazy to have a guy have this much of like an upset tone when if he was on any other organization, he's probably bouncing back and forth between practice squad elevations. Mm-hmm. And instead, he's thought of as some kind of powerful, you know, guy, well-liked guy in the locker room that should be handling this because the team stinks and there's not enough bodies behind them.
I'm trying to think of the impact plays, right?
That Nick McLeod's had?
Right.
Keep looking.
Hey, well, that's my point. There's no Pro Bowls, obviously. He's barely starting in this league. I'm trying to remember the impact plays.
And also, right? Joe Shane saved his career, Tiki. He was way by the Bills.
Right. If you're going to get upset about a replacement-level player getting cut, then you are in dire straits. I'm seriously. Like, if this is... I'm talking about from a player, like a team standpoint. Like, the players in that locker room. I know they might have liked the guy. But was he truly helping you become elite? And the answer is not yes. Like, maybe it's somewhere in between, but it's not definitively, yeah. Without him, we can't operate. And if you're not trying to get players that are like that, meaning if without that guy, we don't work, man, right? Without this guy disrupting up front or shutting down a guy or being so smart or a critical piece of our unit offensively or defensively or special teams, if you're not that player, you are replaceable. So, like, this is a story to make Joe Shane look bad. And, look, Joe Shane's everybody knows where Joe Shane stands, right? He's got to do a better job. He's got to put together a deeper roster. I'm not saying I like the guy or don't like the guy. We know where his job is. But taking an unnecessary shot on a Nick McLeod getting cut situation doesn't make any sense. It's a hit piece, and I hate it because this happens across the league every single week in the NFL. Every week.
Well, that was my key question. So this is normal then?
It is.
That's
absolutely
not abnormal
normal
GM douchey behavior.
Well,
that's
maybe,
normal GM maybe, douchey
maybe
behavior.
Maybe being a jerk and saying, you know, don't pay October's rent. Maybe that's douchey, but who cares? Right?
Okay.
I'm not here to like you. I'm here to win.
Yeah.
Right? I'm here to put together a roster that can get W's. Period. How I do that is up to me. You know, if I'm not a good person, then I'm not a good person. But my job is to get W's.
I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to make money. Who said that, Tommy?
Wow. What wrestler said that?
Come on.
That one I don't remember.
It was recent.
A wrestler said that recently? Was that CM Punk?
There you go. That's my guy right
you got
there.
It. Just took
CM
me a second.
Punk said that recently.
By the way, the other thing I would say, the pushback I would have here with McLeod, I'm not saying he's a great player, but clearly he was respected in the locker room, and this team doesn't have a lot of leaders. And you look at no more Saquon, no more McKinney, McLeod. There's been a lot of leaders here where this administration has said, we're not going to keep these guys.
Was he a captain?
No. But McKinney was, and Saquon, obviously. I'm just saying
that. Yeah,
but they
were free agents.
No, I understand that. But I'm just saying, like, when you look at the lack of leadership here, I think this front office has done a bad job of keeping leaders around.
Loogie, that goes without saying. That's not even that's not even a question. Of course they've done a bad job of getting leaders here. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a replacement level player who is starting because they don't have starting quality players being the crux of making a general manager look bad. That's just find another example. That's
so
all I'm saying.
What I would ask you, T, because this is what the internet is buzzing about, if you're a free agent this year and you see a quote like the October's rent and that whole thing, would that keep you from signing with the Giants because you're like, oh, if this GM's a jerk, he's going to treat me bad? Would that stop them from signing free agents?
How much are you paying me? That's what matters. How much are you paying me?
Show me the money. Who said that? You guys know that answer?
Jerry Maguire.
It wasn't Jerry Maguire.
Tom Cruise as Jerry Maguire.
No, it was Cuba Gooding Jr.
You're right. Rod Tidwell. Yep.
Rod Tidwell said that.
I mean, Jerry said it too, but you're right. Rod Tidwell said it first.
He said it because Rod Tidwell told him to repeat it. I want you to say it, Jerry. I want you to say it. You know what? I got to tell you, it's been a while. I think I should watch that movie tonight.
It's a good movie.
I think it's in that cycle of it's been too long.
Right.
I need to rewatch it.
Now you got to tell us next week if it holds up.
It's a great question. You're right. I don't know if it does.
It's an old movie.
You're right. Sometimes you watch these old movies that you loved a long time ago, and then when you rewatch it, you're like,
I don't love that as much as I did when I was a kid.
That kid
is not actually that cute anymore.
That's true. I'll give you a full review on Tuesday.
Nice.
Let's go to Joe, who is calling from Smithtown. How are you, Joe?
But how are you guys doing?
What's up, man?
How's it going, guys?
All's good.
Cheek, you're a Giants legend, but if Pete Alonso comes back on the contract reported, you'll also be a Mets legend. So a sincere thank you from a Met and Giant fan, a very rare Met and Giant fan.
I appreciate that. My
question, Evan, is what I know it hasn't been so long since this is reported, and you got to think that the Boris camp leaked this to put pressure on Stearns, fan pressure from us to put on the Mets to sign to get this deal done. But wouldn't this check all the boxes of what they're looking for to bring Pete back? I mean,
yes.
You get the short-term answer at first, and you can still go after Vlad. So, I mean, the fact that this is being leaked tells me that this offer was given a couple days ago. So what would the holdup be? What's the due diligence that needs to be done?
I would hope, Joe, that the only holdup is negotiating what the salary is, because obviously that's a big deal. I mean, Scott Boras could say, hey, we're coming to you on a short-term deal. He may be asking for $45 million in year one, some obscene number. And just to give you perspective on it, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. just settled in arbitration with the Toronto Blue Jays. He's going to become the highest paid first baseman in MLB history. And that number, if memory serves correct, is going to be $27.5 million. So my gut, Teak, would be Scott's going to want to beat that.
Right, of course.
So
that becomes the starting point.
Absolutely. So, yes, if he's come off the years, I agree with Joe's point that this is the Met wheelhouse. This is where the Mets, to me, have no excuse.
Right.
You want to say you weren't willing to go 5 or 6 years, fine, I understand it. But if it's really 3 years or less with opt-outs, then it shouldn't be a holdup. So I think the negotiation would be the salary.
Right. Because what we said before, it's what you said earlier this week, it sounds exactly right. 3 for 30, or 3 for 90, 30 a year. Right? Short term. It's not the security that, you know, a 27-year-old would get. But it's a little bit of an overpay, and he's got to prove himself next year. And if he does, then maybe we'll have another negotiation. If not, you stay in your contract, and you're making $90 million over 3 years.
What the Mets have shown us over the last few years is that they're not scared off by high salaries on short-term contracts.
Yes.
So you're right, and that's why the pressure is now on the New York Mets. They can't lose Pete Alonso now. If it really is a short-term contract, you can't let the difference in salary be the reason you lost him.
Yeah.
That will not be accepted by Met fans. We would understand the years, even if we disagree, but the money?
Yeah. And the reason it sucks for Pete is because you become somewhat of a star locally, especially, but maybe even a little bit nationally, and you expect a payday, right? You expect one of these long-term family generational wealth deals, and it doesn't seem like it's in the cards for Pete Alonso. And so what's going to happen is, it kind of like we did with Daniel Jones. Obviously he's better than Daniel Jones, but you know what I mean. It's like every couple of years, it's like, all right, Pete, you got to prove it again.
Yeah.
All right, Pete, you got to prove it again. And he'll make a lot of money regardless, but it's not going to be you've made it and you're on easy street money wise,
right?
Until you're retired, right? Unfortunately, he's gonna have to grind. Until it's done.
A lot of times in baseball, you can get that monster contract. So even if the last few years of your deal, you're not great, you're still getting paid. Pete's in the position right now, and I don't think it's going to change after this year either. He's got to have big years.
No, because he's going to be 31 next year.
Right. That's why, like, you can get the 3-year, get the opt-out after 1 year. Even if he gets 48 home runs next year and he opts out, does he think he's getting six years?
It's going to be the same conversation.
I agree. I think it'll be a very similar market. More of your phone calls on this, of course, thanking Tiki Barber. The fallout in the Giants draft from last night's national championship game, or national championship semifinal game last night, because we got another one tonight, and then, of course, the national championship in a week and a half. Sean's got his Cinco de Stinko list coming up at 3:30. And also, we haven't done this yet. I look forward to it. We are going to predict all the teams with coaching openings and who ends up where. Put it on record and see how accurate we are. A little head coach bingo coming up. And, of course, more of your calls at 888-808-1019. A busy, busy Friday in New York City.